I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, when the July floods tore through Kerr County, leaving behind devastation and grief, the Children's Bereavement Center of South Texas arrived, working steadily to help families cope with the loss. The Bereavement Center's work has focused on creating safe spaces for children to process the trauma of sudden loss. Through healing circles, families are invited to guided conversations where grief can be spoken, heard, and shared. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Independent journalism needs protection, now more than ever. Leaving a gift to TPR in your will helps ensure thoughtful, fact-based news has a future in Texas. Learn more at tpr.org/legacy.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the second half hour, we're going to be hearing about a new Texas law that bans smartphones and other tech from public schools. But first, the heartbreak of the July Central Texas flash flood. Across the region, there were at least 120 fatalities, most of those in Kerr County, where there were about 108 fatalities. Of those, approximately 37 were children, including the 27 girls at Camp Mystic. It's impossible to understand the devastating loss that those families have been experiencing. The Children Bereavement Center of South Texas has been on the ground in Kerr County, helping families as best they can deal with these losses. We're joined by the Bereavement Center of South Texas School-Based Program Director, Devin Aguilar-Mock. And Devin, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, we're so happy to have you here today to give us an update on what is happening in Kerr County on this. But I do want to start off with a sound clip. It's rather long, but it's from yesterday when families went to testify before the Texas Senate regarding the law that would require protections of these camps and trying to deal with the public safety issue of these flash floods. Let's give a listen.
My name is Michael McCown, and I'm here representing myself and my wife, Callie, in support of SB1. Chairman Perry and the members of the committee, I want to thank each of you for inviting us, the families who lost our daughters at Camp Mystic during the Kerr County floods, to participate in this hearing and let our voices be heard. We had a daughter, Lenny. She was 8 years old. She is dead. On July 31st, we were unable to attend the joint hearing in Kerrville. Our lives have been devastated by Lenny's death, and we are only just beginning the long process of recovery. On July 4th, while driving to Kerrville to pick up my daughter, I received an email from Camp Mystic stating, "If you have not been personally contacted, then your daughter is accounted for." I felt a wave of relief, which was quickly shattered about 30 minutes later when my wife called, incredibly distraught, to say that Lenny is missing. She just got off the phone with the camp. She is unaccounted for. Over the next 48 hours, I was called to the Grimes Funeral Home to identify two bodies. One was not Lenny, but the other, I believed, was Lenny. Once the Texas Rangers took over the identification and recovery process, I returned to Kerrville from Austin to provide a DNA swab. Additionally, on July 5th, while searching for Lenny downstream of Camp Mystic, I found a deceased young girl. With the assistance of Wilson County Sheriff's deputies and National Forest Service personnel, we were able to retrieve her body and send her home. I recount these events to emphasize that I had no desire to return to Kerr County for those initial hearings, but I am now ready to speak. Lenny was the middle child between her brothers Bates, who's 11, and George, who's 3. To Bates, she was the pesky but beloved little sister. To George, she was a gentle, playful mother figure. On the weekends, she would even pour him Cheerios and milk so my wife and I could get a couple more minutes of rest. To everyone else, she was a joy. She hugged her teachers, was a friend to everybody, and spread an infectious giggle everywhere she went. On July 3rd, the first flash flood advisory went out in Kerr County, forecasting potential flash flooding through the weekend. Early that next morning, on July 4th, a flash flood warning was issued. and those warnings escalated in number and severity throughout that morning. We trusted Camp Mystic with her precious life, but that trust was broken in the most devastating way. The camp had a heightened duty of care, and they failed to perform. That failure cost 25 campers and two young counselors their lives. No one had to die that day. I still remember standing near Bubble Inn the morning of July 5th amidst the wreckage of camp, looking at the cabins and asking myself, how, why, how could these girls vanish into the night without anyone having eyes on them? While cabins, literally just 20 yards away, had no casualties. So what went wrong? When I was in school, we had fire drills. Teachers did not need to be told to line up the kids and head for the exit. They did not need to check with their superiors. If the alarm went off, the school was evacuated. No fire drill I've ever heard of evacuates only one part of a building while leaving others behind. It didn't even cross my mind that a camp like Mystic wouldn't have a detailed emergency procedure in place. When action was finally taken, it was too little, too late. We did not send Lenny to a war zone. We sent her to camp. We trusted she would be safe. No parent should ever again face what we are living through now. Camp is supposed to be a safe place, a place where kids can grow, learn about themselves and each other, and take on some adventure while away from the modern life. Yes, there are risks in outdoor activities, but there was never a question in my mind that a camp would not be prepared for them. I do not hate camp. I went to Camp Oconee Springs outside of Marble Falls for several years. I sincerely believe in camp, and I doubt you will find one person after me who will have ill things to say about the idea of summer camp. I believe that being disconnected from electronics for a time is very healthy for kids, but that disconnection should be superficial. Behind the scenes, the back office, and the foundation of summer camp must be fully up to date. Safety measures must not lag behind. The measures in this bill, keeping cabins out of floodplains, requiring real emergency plans, mandating weather radios and alert systems, should already be the baseline for every summer camp. It will hurt my family forever that for reasons I still do not know, these protections were not in place or not thought out thoroughly for my daughter and the rest of the girls here. SB1 cannot bring Lenny back, but it can save other children. Please pass this bill, protect our kids, and do not let their deaths be in vain. That is all.
So Devin Aguilar-Mock, the school program director for Children's Bereavement Center of South Texas, you hear the parent telling the story of his child. There's a lot of pain, a lot of loss, but he's dealing with a lot. And the whole entire family and the siblings. And how do y'all even begin to help people with that?
Yeah, so this is a path we walk day in and day out with families. We get calls of families just not understanding what the next step is, and that's where we take over. We have an intake team that can walk them through the process and all the services and really outline everything. And then we have therapists that walk them through and understand what the needs are, meet the children. And we provide provide school-based services as well as group support group services. And all of this is at no cost to families.
And how soon was the Bereavement Center involved in helping out in Kerr County?
The next morning we were coming together as a team and trying to figure out how we were best going to support the community. On Sunday, the 6th of July, after everything happened, we opened our doors and had therapists volunteer their time and welcomed anybody that needed support, whether it was families that were directly in the disaster, or if there was families local to San Antonio that had nothing at stake in the actual Kerrville disaster, but grief triggers grief. And if they needed support, we were there to listen and help them try to process what happened.
Yeah, that's interesting about grief triggers grief. People who have gone through terrible loss themselves, they see this disaster, they hear the testimony we just listened to, and again, they're having to be dealing with that again. And so we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break, and our phone lines are open. If you want to call in and tell us how you're feeling, how this impacts you and your family, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And the source continues after this 1 minute break.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The Children's Bereavement Center of South Texas here in San Antonio has a team in the area impacted by the flooding along the Upper Guadalupe River, serving many families dealing with the devastating loss of children following the flooding disaster and other family members in Kerrville and the surrounding area. We're hearing from Devin Aguilar-Mock. She is the school program director for the Children's Bereavement Center of South Texas. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 833-877-8255. So how do you support children who not only lost loved ones, but also they went through a traumatic event during the flood? You know, maybe they had to escape the water, they were caught in high water, and they saw terrible things. These are children that really need to be seen and heard, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so it depends on the child. Every child is different. Our therapists utilize play-based modalities. When people come to the center, they're very shocked at this. We were expecting to feel like a doctor's office, but they come and it is centered around play because children process and learn through play. And so that is truly what we lean on. But at the same time, we meet a child where they are. We listen to themes in their play of, you know, if something is coming up regularly, we understand that this is something that they are trying to process and that they are trying to work on. We do continuing education with our therapists all the time to really make sure that we are staying in best practices to best support these students through an extremely difficult time, and then adding in that trauma factor to there.
As I understand it, often the response from children who go through this is that they're fine. They want to tell you, I'm fine. And they don't want to really illustrate that they have outstanding questions and feelings and that they're in turmoil internally. So how do you penetrate, or how do you help a child who wants to insist that they're fine?
Yeah, so sometimes kids don't have the language. I can count a number of times that I haven't always been able to express exactly how I'm feeling. And then to be able to have a child use that same vocabulary is really hard. And so we try to take away some of those words and just meet them where they are in different ways, different expressions, to figure out where those emotions truly are and let them express themselves in an organic way.
What kind of partnerships have you established in Kerrville, Kerr County to help with this work?
You know, communities and schools is in Kerrville, and they're really supporting that area. So that has truly been a big help for us. St. Peter's Episcopal Church opened up their doors and have given us spaces to be able to hold some of these sessions and some of these healing circles in Kerrville. Hill Country Casa has generously offered us rooms at their space that are very equipped with play and equipped to already have sessions. They're beautiful centers. And so we've had an outpouring of just being willing to help and to support the community.
So who are you helping? Is it the children? Is it the parents? Who gets to take advantage of your services?
So typically here in the San Antonio area, we see children 3 to 24 years old. But for the Hill Country area, we're trying to meet the community where they are, and we are seeing anybody that needs it. Sometimes, you know, we refer people out if there's not a death loss in there. But for the Kerrville community, because it may not have been somebody directly that died next to your in your circle, it's just a traumatic thing, but you're also grieving the community and things. We're also offering up services for that. So if really anybody in Kerrville who needs it, we have a therapist out there who is ready to take on clients. And then we also have a school-based therapist for Hunt ISD that will be taking on specifically children in the Hunt school.
Let's go to a caller. Our number is 833-877-8255, and we have Elizabeth on the line. Elizabeth, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm just calling to ask Devin, how do parents support their children when they see disasters like this happening on the news? What's the best way to broach this topic with your children who are watching this happen and seeing other children struggling and dealing with this catastrophe?
Elizabeth, thank you for your call. And Devin?
Yeah, thank you for calling. There's no one set way, but I would see what the developmental age or in of your child is and really determine what the best way is. At the end of the day, you're always, what your gut is probably the best way. But some real key tips: listen, make sure you're active listening. You know, I know sometimes it's hard. You're cooking dinner, you're looking at your phone, doing whatever it is. Pause, look at your child in the eye and make sure that they feel seen and validated. Allow that emotional expression. Sometimes we want to fix things and fix their pain, but let them know that it is okay to cry. It is okay to ask questions. And, you know, if you don't have the answer, it is okay to also say, I don't know, but I can see how that would confuse you because it confuses me too, or whatever it may be. But letting them know that you don't have all the answers is okay. Practicing self-care, kind of the oxygen mask theory of, you have to put your mask on in an airplane first before you can help anyone else. Make sure you're centered and grounded before you're responding to your children as best as you can, so you can be there truly for them, but also making sure that you're okay yourself. And then just knowing when to ask for help. If you don't know the answer and you know that your child might need a little bit more assistance, there's resources for you on our website. We do have resources. And then keeping routines as normal as possible. Children thrive in routines and they depend on that. That helps them create safe spaces to be able to ask these questions. And so keeping that routine and making sure that they know right now we're safe and things are okay.
So what are some signs that you might be able to pick up on if a child is dealing with a disaster and they're traumatized, but they don't want to say anything about it? How can I pick up on the fact that my child might need to talk to somebody?
Yeah, so trust your gut instincts. You know your child best. If you notice that your child has a lower mood that's really prolonged, if they're acting out of their norm, I would say that those are times to really consult with somebody. People are always welcome to call our center and ask to speak to, you know, one of the therapists to determine, you know, is this normal for my child? And we are happy to walk you through and say, yes, that's a pretty normal grief reaction for your child at that age. Or why don't you go ahead and we'll get you an appointment. We can understand this better.
And this is not a short process. This is going to take a long time. I mean, for example, the bereavement center, you have facilities still in Uvalde, don't you?
Yes, we do. And no, it's not going to, this isn't going to end in a year. Grief is lifelong. You're going to grieve something. You know, I know in the call, he mentioned he has a 3-year-old. His 3-year-old will grieve right now and then at every developmental age in his life for the rest of his life. And so we are here to walk with families in whatever capacity they need. We have, it's not unheard of for clients to come in at one age and then a couple of years later need to come in it again, and that's okay too.
So what role do community gatherings, for example, the first football season of the year with the Kerrville Tyvee Antlers, they're going to be playing on Friday night. It's a big community gathering for people. That stadium was a central part of the recovery and the memorial and coming together and watching a football game, but it's still a celebration of community. What kind of role do these community gatherings play in the healing process?
Yeah, being able to realize that you're not alone. Grief can feel extremely isolating, but it's one of the very few things that every person is going to go through. Unfortunately, it happens. So being able to understand that while grief makes you feel like you're in isolation, there are others around you that are there that have felt maybe not the exact same thing, but are feeling grief, and it builds that community support.
And how do you ensure cultural sensitivity in the way that you provide bereavement care? You know, different families have different, you know, faiths and backgrounds, and sometimes do you have to navigate that?
Yeah, so one of the very first things that we do in the first conversation that they have with a therapist after we've gone through the intake process is we have what we call a biopsychosocial assessment, where we talk with the caregiver and understand more about their family, their child specifically. And one of those questions is, what are some your religious preferences? How important is that to you? What do you need us to know about you and your child when we walk into this care? And then on our end, our therapists have that duty to make sure that we are providing the utmost sensitive practices.
So with the bereavement center providing these services, as well as your baseline service that you provide, and you're also in Uvalde and many other places, I'm sure, how are you doing in terms of being able to provide the counselors and all the services? Are you able to meet these challenges? What can the community do to support you?
Yeah. You know, on our website, there's always ways on how to support us. Our counselors, we check in with them. We have connections, I believe, with ChildSafe where they've offered us a space to be able to practice that self-care and to do, you know, different courses to make sure that we're also taking care of ourselves as we navigate this very heavy work. But truly, we've also had volunteers who have donated time and made coping kits that we've been able to bring to Kerrville and the surrounding area.
What's in a coping kit?
Yeah, so the coping kit has, it's a little box filled with different coping strategies for children, and it helps promote self-regulation and really grounding themselves. There's a teddy bear that they, you know, every child that comes to the center gets a teddy bear at the end of their thing to really mark that moment that they've come. So it has a teddy bear. And then there's also incredible resources for caregivers on how to navigate grief, how to best support their child, and answer a lot of frequently asked questions.
Grief does not end quickly, if it ever ends at all. So how do you plan on staying present in Kerr County as families continue to work on healing?
Yeah, I think we are a very client-centered organization, and we're just going to continue to listen to what the community needs. We've been very active in trying to understand what it is and meet them where they need us the most. So I can't anticipate how long it'll be or anything like that, but we are going to continue to listen to what their needs are.
So, I mean, children, what they want answers, you know, particularly like, is this going to happen again? I'm like, is this, and obviously we're hearing, you know, the Texas lawmakers talking about tougher standards and trying to assure things. But can you seriously tell your child honestly that they're safe when you take them to a place like this? I mean, I can't imagine how, a parent who takes their child to a camp, you drop them off. I know that feeling. And it's just a pit in the stomach and you hope everything's going to be fine. And fortunate for me, it was. But, you know, how do you move on with that? How do you trust? How do you have that trust moving forward?
Yeah, and that's a really hard question because at any time anything can happen. We're never truly 100% safe, so that's really hard to answer. But I think being able to talk with your child about, you know, these are the things that we've looked up. We've looked up that there's an evacuation plan for this. We've looked up this, checking all the boxes that you can with them, reiterating those routines. I'm going to pick you up. These are the people that you can contact if you don't feel safe, whatever it may be. You know, if they hear rain, just grounding them in. Right now, we are inside of our house. Like, we can look at the weather together, doing things that are as age appropriate as possible to ground them and also ground you in what are the facts right now.
So what message do you want grieving families to hear most clearly from the bereavement center right now?
I think that we are here and will always be here to walk the path of grief with them and support them in any way that they need.
And letting them know they're not alone. I mean, do people coming together who went through this terrible event together and talking about their experiences, does that help?
Absolutely. We have peer support groups. And then we will also have a Wednesday evening group in Kerrville that's led by a therapist that'll be starting soon. But being able to hear other people and build that community is extremely powerful. Sometimes it's powerful and it's needed to have that individual intervention. But sometimes hearing from a group and sharing that story over and over again or whatever capacity you need can be monumental.
And there are people who may feel like, well, I didn't lose anybody, but I feel terrible. I lost a home or something, but you know, their grief is just as valid, isn't it?
Yes, it's Kerrville especially, it's a compounded grief. There's loss of areas, loss of people, and it's a complicated one.
Well, Devin Aguilar-Mock, thank you for coming in the studio today and talking to us about this. Devin Aguilar-Mock is the school program director for the Children's Bereavement Center of South Texas, and they are in Kerr County working with families there. They're still in Uvalde County, working with families there. Always too much work for you these days. Sorry about that, but thanks for coming in today. That's The Source.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.